Welcome back. It's that time again, another scintillating, effervescent, ebullient, and otherwise adjectival episode of Guitar Talk with John and Jamie. This is John and...
This is Jamie. Hola.
Well, you did Spanish one time before.
It's all right. I can do it as much as I want.
Because repetition is good.
Yeah.
That's right. This is when improvisation is a good...
Yeah, no, this is America. We're all about freedom.
Hola.
For now.
What was that thing in Swedish you were teaching me earlier?
We'll talk about it later.
Okay. Today, again, Jamie and I are really fortunate to have a special guest with us. Actually, one of my favorite guitar players in Los Angeles and an amazing teacher at MI for the last, I believe, 33 years, mm-hmm. Mr. Dan Gilbert. Dan?
Hello, everybody. I'm Daniel Welcome. Gilbert.
Daniel, that's right. I'm sorry. I was being familiar.
Yeah, no problem.
Daniel
Gilbert. As long as you don't call me Danny.
Okay. Don't call me late to dinner. Isn't that the one? Yeah. Sorry, I just had to do that. Okay, so today we thought we'd talk about the idea of teaching and being a student and being a teacher. I mean, Jamie and I have both been long-term students at Ted Green, so we have that sort of mentality. All three of us at various points have taught at the Musicians Institute, but Dan has been there for 33 years, and I'd really like to sort of hear your thoughts on the evolution of what that's been like and your thoughts on teaching in general and learning the art and craft of being a professional guitar player and musician in general, in one or two words or less.
Why don't I get it? I actually think that, let me get it rolling in a different way, if I may.
Would you please?
Yeah, I didn't know which one of those things.
Yeah, Dan, you were an instructor at GIT way back when I went there in the early 80s. You were teaching there. And you were always one of my favorite instructors. I'm just sort of curious as to if you've seen any kind of, not so much an evolution, but just any kind of shift in the types of students that are coming through MI, in their, you know, the attitudes of the students that are coming in. Because, you know, you tend to get students that come in. I still teach there. I'm there very part-time. But I see students come through there, and they're, with as much information that's available to everyone nowadays and as many resources as young students, it seems that they still show up there with this kind of starry-eyed optimism about, you know, yeah, I just want to make it and be, you know. But, you know, which I just kind of want to get your take as someone that's been there, you know, almost from the beginning of the inception of the school. As to like what you've seen, just a general shift in the attitudes of the students, like what their goals are, you know what I mean? Does that question make sense at all?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously you guys have been around a long time too, and you've seen how much like our industry has changed. But as far as the student, I have to say that before there was more like, there was a purity about just doing the guitar and doing music, and it wasn't so much like, my career. And mm-hmm. the guitar and music was sort of, you know, like a vehicle for that. Mm-hmm. Not to over-idealize, but, you know, it did seem like before everybody was just so in love with the guitar and music, and that, you know, the career thing was like secondary.
Right, right.
Like that came about a result of you like being really good on your guitar.
Wasn't that earlier that was a truism though in terms of the music? Music studying or let's say, but academic perspective, that there was a period where, like when we first started all playing guitar in the 80s, that you had to actually be good at what you were doing. You actually had to be able to play. I mean, that was an actual criterion, and that's somewhat evolved over time. It wasn't about whether or not you can play or not. It's about what you look like or how your attitude is or what your career focus is, because it's not always just about being an instrumentalist anymore, right? I mean...
Yeah, that's true. I mean, everybody needs to make money, of course, and everybody's thinking about that. And I guess one of the really bizarre things to me every once in a while, if I stop and think about it, is that, you know, a lot of students at the school, you know, like think that rock star is like an occupation that you could get.
I want that job.
You know, by answering an ad in the Village Voice or the New York Times or the LA Weekly or
something.
How
would that ad read? I'm curious. How would that ad read?
Looking for a 21-year-old with excellent hair and guitar skills, minimal. No, that's not necessarily true, especially now these days. I mean, I think you have to be really good. I mean, some of these metal guitar players are really awesome in that way, and it's pretty impressive. I was just thinking the other day that if I was really young and coming up now, I might be a little bit kind of in awe of the kind of speed and chops you're supposed to have to play that yeah. kind of music.
Yeah.
Well, I'll finish that out. I'd like to finish that. Looking for a 21-year-old something with good hair, reasonable chops. What else? I mean, is it
willing
is
to work for $250 a week?
Yeah, that's the key. That's the key thing in the ad, I think. You know, skills as a guitarist, depending on the type of gig it is. That's a really astute observation, because it seems to me that a lot of the guitar players, because it used to be that, the rock players were the guys that are like, man, I'm just bashing around on the guitar, and they would look to the jazz players and be, excuse me, I just knocked the computer. Look at that. They would look at the jazz players and be intimidated by their abilities, their knowledge, the level at which they were playing. But now I definitely don't think it's shifted, because you know the jazz oriented players are definitely still there. But now the guys that are in the like Gojira, you know, the guitar player from that band, you know. The metal guys, the level of music, the bar has been raised.
Well, also the lines blurring. I mean, there were I think when we all started out, much more clearly defined genre boundaries. And then you got guys like Scott Henderson who really blurs it. You know, you've got guys like Dan who, I mean, we just did your record, a few months ago, and you have six or seven tunes, and I was there for recording all of your solos, and I was mixing it, and I listened to it every day, and there's six or seven distinct sort of stylistic perspectives that you're taking in the course of one, you know, CD. And it's like, so there's a blurring that's also happening within players' boundaries, where it's not so clear, you know, I may be a rock guy, but I can still improvise, or I may be a jazz guy, but I've got to be able to play with distortion, or, you know, there's a blurring that's definitely occurring in players' mentality.
Well, that's, I mean, but we're talking about when we're getting into like the, you know, the metal genre, there's not really much blurriness there. I don't think you're going to see.
Why aren't some of them like neoclassical? I mean,
I want to go back to your basic point, because I was going to like basically really disagree with that, is, that I think that there were less style boundaries earlier when we were getting started mm-hmm. than now. Now it's really style boundary.
Really?
And there are guys that mix and do fusion. I guess I was just really thinking about radio. I mean, I grew up in New York with WBAI, and I can remember that there would be like a Led Zeppelin tune and then a Ravi Shankar tune mm-hmm. and then a Frank Sinatra tune.
Yeah, I remember that too.
And then a Nina Simone tune. And I've never gotten over that I really like that idea of being able, and you really can't find that now. Yeah. You have to actually like change radio stations if you want to do that.
Mm-hmm. Or Pandora.
Yeah. So I really miss that. And as a matter of fact, I did a fusion album in the 80s called Mr. Invisible, and it had a really wide range of grooves on it. And, you know, one of the critiques, one of my friends says, was like, well, man, it's all over the map. You can't be all over the map like that. You got to have a thing.
What was his rationale?
That there were too many, you know, there's a Latin tune, there's a funk tune, there's a rock tune. It's like, it's too wide ranging. There's a jazz tune.
And he felt that people wouldn't be able to be accessible, yeah, or yeah. they wouldn't be able to be labeled it for distribution on the radio.
Yeah, there'd be no way for people to peg it, you know.
Right.
So, I still don't care, actually, but it seems like, you know, my latest stuff, that all sort of hangs together, you mm-hmm. know, from the lightest one to the heaviest one that, you know, like bookend things, you know, that it seems to hang together.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, so I think that's really interesting. Things are really stylized. I mean, but then there are so many styles too. There are like these incredible gypsy jazz guitar players. Yeah. There are really great, really knowledgeable like pop guitar players now. They really know their mm-hmm. stuff. And then there's the fusion guys who, you know, I think of some of the guys at MI or Ernesto and like Greg Harrison and some of the shit they do. I mean, their music doesn't really touch me, but as far as like guitarist skills, it's really impressive.
Yeah, there's a huge like an array of guys who do it. But like from like a teaching point of view, like when we were coming up, like I remember the way I would learn to do stuff is I would take a needle, lift it up, put it back, you know, drop it down, take a needle, drop it up. Now there's so many resources. You were touching on this earlier today, that Jamie was, that there's so many resources available to the students now where they're almost like handed or given, you know, the materials to work with, and yet it seems like they're not taking advantage of it. Or what's your experience with that?
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing. I mean, sometimes I shock students by telling them, you know, straight up front, I say, you know, listen, if you were a certain type, all you need to do is stay home and turn on the computer and go to YouTube, and there are free lessons. There's free everything on there. But here you are sitting in this room. So you are not that type. You're a type that needs to be shown and guided and perhaps cajoled a little bit and you know, and driven. And I was the same way. I needed somebody to really take me on that trip. And it's not a put down to the students that are there. I mean, I think all of us can think of somebody in our background that was like that little local genius.
Yeah.
That I absolutely. Mean, I remember the guy that taught me how to, you know, show me the first things on guitar. He sat down with the radio and a guitar and figured out how to play Reverend Gary Davis tunes, who was doing these syncopated, you know, ragtime things on guitar. And he just sat there and did, and he was amazingly talented. And so, but those are really, really few. I tell people, these are really, really few. Mm-hmm. The rest of us work hard. And we discover our natural talents, and we work on our weak points, and you know, we get our strong points better, and you know, I think it's just incredibly fascinating, you know. But there are those few, and I know from your guys' reactions, you knew several of those yourselves.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of that movie Good Will Hunting. You know that movie where there's a scene in the bar in Harvard where he's like completely just like tearing this guy a new brain because the guy was trying to diss his buddy when he was picking up the girl. And at one point he goes, you know, at some point you're going to realize that you could have had the same education for 50 cents in a library card at, you know, at the local library as you're getting at Harvard. And, you know, there was really something to that, which is the self-starter aspect, which we had in our generation, which was there wasn't a GIT. Like you're really actually part of a movement in terms of music and education that wasn't available when we were coming up. I mean, you, Jamie, went to GIT?
Yeah.
What was that like when you were there?
Well, it was, you know, I went when I was 18. So I got out of high school like a semester early to go, you know, in the March. You know, back then it was like March to March or September to September. And I went. And for being at the development level that I was at the time, it was amazing. And what it did was it armed me with so much data and information to the point where my knowledge level was way up here, yet my applicational skills were.
I just want to point out your gesturing.
Way so, down at the floor. Yeah,
can I just describe the gestures you was?
Application high, or I'm sorry, knowledge high, application.
So knowledge high was a hand waving way up in the high sky above his head, and application low, hand towards the ground.
And it, you know, and I remember something that you would always hear then is like you get out of it exactly what you put into it. You know, I mean that was the saying they everyone there used to say. And I remember leaving there with so much stuff. I mean, it literally took me about, you know, 3 or 4 years to catch up with everything. And I would go to like, Scott Henderson had just graduated from there and had just started doing open counseling. And I would go and I would sit in his open counseling and I would just, you know, take notes. I would just like literally copy every word that he was saying as he'd be sitting there talking. And it's like, man, I have no idea what this motherfucker is talking about. But someday I'm gonna understand what all this means. I'm gonna be able to kind of apply it. And sure enough, that's what happened. You know,
that's great.
It took me years to catch up with the stuff that I learned there. It was a completely different school than it is now.
Okay.
That's my take on especially.
So did you kind of agree with my assessment of how we used to be?
Yeah.
And I'm not dissing the present students because there are guys that work really, really hard.
I agree.
And there is a certain, how should I say, there's a certain type of student that is very prevalent these days that is very sort of educated as to what's going on, even if they can't really play.
Yeah.
They are aware of a lot of things.
Yeah.
And that's a cool thing.
Yeah. I had a guy in the recording techniques class who was completely savvy about how YouTube marketing and the interviral aspects of playing with different guys. Like it was like this, he had this whole thing worked out. Well, if I play on this guy's thing, he gets a million hits every time he puts a thing out, and I'll get feedback and I'll make money because, I mean, it was this whole thing that I was completely not tuned into.
Yeah. I think that as just that age group, we sound like a bunch of old guys sitting around, you know.
Wait.
Yeah. Kvetching.
I think, okay.
The generation of guitar players and music enthusiasts coming up now, they're very savvy as to the marketing aspects of like, because there isn't really radio per se anymore. There really aren't record companies per se anymore. So it's a completely different.
Which could be a good thing, by the way.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think it is a bad thing, but it's just a different way of operating now, and it's all about YouTube. It's all about getting hits on YouTube. And
even that doesn't quite make sense to me. I know a woman, Sarah Nimitz, who's like one of the best young singers in LA, 19 years old. She gets 4, 5, 6 million hits on each one of the songs she posts. I don't know if she's generating money. I mean, I don't know the model of what's going on. And she's really, you know, she plays with great players in town. She's 20 years old, but I don't understand the model. Like, if you're getting 6 million plays of a piece of music that you've written or are singing, where's the monetization and how that works? And that could be actually a future show. That could actually be, we could find somebody and talk to them about how that works. Because I think
if you really find out how that works, we probably shouldn't tell anybody.
Exactly.
At least let's make our fortunes first. I mean, we'll be more than happy to help you later.
Later.
Yeah, after we get our cut.
After our cut. Wait, is there a cut? I hear that interweb thing is getting pretty big. So interweb.
Yeah, nice.
The internets.
My mom used to ask me if I was still working with that string guy. She said, that string guy. Hey, are you still working with that string guy? What are you referring to? Sting.
Oh.
She's like, Sting, that string guy. String guy.
Oh, that's good.
So I got a question, though. This is because I'm really curious. What is it, because you've been doing this a really long time, what is it that excites you when you're teaching? What really brings out that spark of, whoa, this is awesome? And, you know, because, you know, it's a sustaining principle. 33 years of teaching is a lot.
Yeah, well, you know, when I think about answering that question, it's almost kind of embarrassing, but, you know, it is coming from a pure place in that, you know, when I get up there, I really am excited to go over these things with them and show people exactly what they can do with them. And as I've been telling the students, that, you know, every time I go over the basics, and as we know, all the advanced stuff is the basics over and over again in different ways, how we construct it and play with it. So every time, even when it goes back to the major scale, I'm still kind of experimenting and trying to push myself and do something new and demonstrated it in a different way. I always kind of joke around with students that, you know, if I can't demonstrate it with distortion and really fast, then they don't buy it. So I make sure I can do that all the time as well. Like, you know, and so that's challenging and kind of fun also.
So like a beginner's mind almost. I mean, it's,
you know, that was just a thought. Maybe I'm just kind of a little bit too simple minded. I mean, if you guys look around, you'll see, you know, one thing that I have here is the tarot card, the Fool, which is,
well, I respect that.
An interesting, it doesn't mean somebody's stupid. It means somebody just kind of tripping through life and following their joy and their message. And that's what I feel I've been able to do at MI, really.
Suzuki Roshi was a very famous Zen teacher who wrote a book called Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. It's considered a seminal work in, oh, don't make the joke. I already saw it coming. Not even worse. No one's looking at me right now. But Suzuki Roshi wrote a brilliant book called Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, which is considered one of the foundations of meditation contemplative practice, where he said that true mastery begins with the adoption of a beginner's mind all the time. That you return over and over again to the beginner's mind so that when you're approaching things, not only is it fresh, but it's inspiring. You know, that you can learn a lot and still be a master, but if you can't return to that beginner's mind of, you know, that first spark of freshness when that first D chord you played on the guitar was like the coolest thing ever. You know, and as a teacher, and as a player, when I watch you play, I see that when you're playing, especially as an improviser, I've sat in a room like 2 feet away from you while you're playing and taking solos and watched you reinvent that piece of music each time you went through it. You know, there was a really, really brilliant freshness to it. In fact, I'm going to plug his CD. Please go out and check out
Before the Sunrise.
Thank you. No, I'm just giving you the opportunity.
Oh, thank you.
Before the Sunrise, Dan Gilbert on his website, and just really check it out. There's some great guitar playing on there. This has been another wonderful opportunity for us to explore all things guitar. We're going to have Dan come back again. Dan is going to be participating. By the time you've heard this, we'll have participated in our Sunday talk at the LA Amp and Guitar Show, year 2012, and he'll be on the guitar panel live guitar talk with John and Jamie at the show. And we'd like to thank you. Is there anything you'd like to add and to, you know, sort of close out with?
No, not at all. I mean, thanks very much for the opportunity. I hope we can get a chance to talk again. And yeah, I'm going to urge you guys next time. I'm going to force us all to break out our guitars and see what happens with that.
We keep thinking, we should play.
That's never been done yet, I guess.
Yeah, so. Apparently not yet. Up until the moment in time this has been, we keep threatening that we're going to actually break out guitars and stuff. But then there's sort of that whole guitar talk aspect of the thing.
Right, but don't you think people are kind of sitting out there like wondering, like, can these guys actually fucking play?
No. We can't.
No, we can't
imagine. That's why we're just talking about
that's right.
It. We need to shut up.
Oh, we can't play or we can't see. I thought you were saying we don't wonder if people are wondering.
No, I'm saying we can't actually play.
I actually wasn't wondering if they cared.
No,
they care. Believe me, they care. I guess we're all pumping on websites so people are going there and traffic has increased.
Yeah, it's a future. It's an upcoming episode, we promise. Okay.
Yeah, so what we tend to do at the end is we tend to just meander our way out while music plays us out. So we kind of talk about the weather and life and.
Yeah,
you know the
my cat's name is Dorian.
Dorian,
yeah. Where is Dorian?
Well, even she's Dorian. Really shy. She's not gonna come out.
How many? Just one.
She the second step in the litter. Was she the second cat in the litter?
I hate that way of looking at it.
I just, is her sixth?
She had a raised child. She was her own child.
Yeah. Maybe she had a tail with a raised sixth, or you know, or something like that. Yeah. It's just really not working, is it? We're just driveling out right now at this point.
There's music.
There's music playing, and we kind of.
Oh, there is music.
Yeah. At this point, we're sort of drifting out, and I'm fading us out, and it's music.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Dan, for doing that.
Thanks for doing
my
this.
My pleasure. Yeah. Thank you.
That was awesome. Yeah, it's cool. That's all it is. I mean, we just sit and talk about
stuff. Yeah,
I wanted to ask you about your album a little bit more, and
we can add that, and I can add it in. Why don't we do that? You know what? We faded out, but we've decided to fade back in because this is podcasting. We're back.
We can edit it.
We're back.
Dan,
I faded out and faded back in.
I wanted to ask you about your album that you did, specifically about. I'm making an album. This isn't a shameless plug for myself, but I'm in the process of making an album. It's just taken me forever because, you know, money, blah, blah, blah.
Believe me, I know the feeling.
Yeah. So you've gotten this done and you've completed. Is this your first, like, solo album under your name?
I would say that this is my first solo EP under my name.
Okay. And how has that experience been now that it's completed and it's out there in the world? Is it the type of thing like, you know, I'll just be blunt with my question. What do you do with it? You know what I mean? There's no radio airplay possibilities for something like that. It's instrumental guitar music.
That's a really good question. It's something that I'm just now kind of butting my head up against and trying to figure out. But, you know, the thing that I'm learning now is that the avenues are just so wide that... But the thing is, you know, for me, you really have to take time away from the music and your guitar to really research how to do these things. Mm-hmm. I mean, I finally got my song music up on CD, baby, and iTunes.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's now digital. It's all available. Download digitally the CD.
You can download it. However, you know, like one of the tunes on my CD is named RR. And, you know, the second letter came out small case. So I have to figure out how to get onto the website. You know what I mean? All this kind of stuff. For me... Like, younger people kind of grew up with that. It's much easier. They see the model. For me, it's still really hard to wrap my thing around the head. Like, everybody, like, I see
Wait, wrap your head around the thing.
I'm going to tell you what the thing is. Wrap my head around the thing of, like, I see people on Facebook. Hey, I just did my new album. Come on to my website and download it for free.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking, I don't understand.
I don't.
Okay, maybe they're out doing a million gigs and that's it. You know, so I'm trying everything. I got my hardcore CDs that I sell on PayPal and or go to my website, and I go to the post office and send them out. And now I just got my first thing. Okay, two people downloaded my CD from CD Baby. So cool. So I'm just beginning to figure out how to do this thing. I mean, I would love to get somebody else, and I would even pay them a little bit of money to do it. As a matter of fact, a friend just told me about another website. The name escapes me. Where you pay, it's an internet radio station, and you pay them a little bit of money for like 100 plays or 150 plays, and the more it kind of gets out there and they get it on YouTube and everything, then it starts to filter back, and then people will start to
download. That's an interesting model.
It's modern payola.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking. It's so funny. I was just thinking that.
It's modern payola.
Listen, sorry out there. From what I understand about the industry, it's still all payola.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah. No, and that never went away. Yeah. Even when they said that it did, it didn't. You know,
I was always so confused about when I got on the road with some singer I was with, and I heard her talking to the record company guy, and they were actually going, "Yes, $1,500 a spin." I'm sitting there going, "Like, I thought that was illegal. I thought that was down in the 50s or something."
It still exists, and then for a while it was a thing where it wasn't actually money; it was more about cocaine and hookers and this. But yeah, I toured with an artist in the late 90s. And it was the same thing. We're working this record right now. Then all of a sudden, they're like, they're done. You know, it just vanishes. The airplay goes away. Tour support.
I mean, do either of you guys remember the Hunter Thompson quote about the music.
Yes,
yes,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah. And then yeah,
and that's the shiny side.
Yeah, that's the upside.
Let's just give the last one.
Yeah. Well, this is actually really interesting. I'd like to actually do another episode with Dan if we can this week, and actually talk about the idea of what it means to be an artist and a businessman in the new digital age. And I think this could be a really interesting topic because one of the things is that I mean, Dan and I worked really closely together on this project for several months, and I got to see the creative process with Dan very clearly. And again, I was really honored to be able to mix it because I spent hours and hours listening to your music, which was very, very inspiring. But there really is a next stage, Jamie, where once you created the project and you want to get it out into the world, there's this digital sea of vomit that you have to kind of rise to the top of to get people to notice it. And that's an actual great topic of conversation. So we're going to do a secondary fade now. So
don't fade before I get a chance to say this. Like, I really look, just as I tell my guitar students all the time, I want to learn stuff from them. If anybody has any tips for me about things that I can do to kind of get my stuff out there, give me some help, because I certainly don't know everything.
Okay, so if you're listening to the show and you're really familiar with the new models of distribution, and this is going to be a subject we're going to explore for a while with a number of different shows. We'd love some feedback on the site. Feel free to post comments on the blog page or on the iTunes page or anywhere on the Facebook page about what your understanding is about how do you reach people once you've created something. I think this is a great topic of conversation, and we'd love to hear what you have to say about it. We're going to talk with Dan about this again on another show. Dan Gilbert, thank you so much for
being here. Dan, give a plug for your album one more time since it's now available.
CD Daniel Baby. Daniel Gilbert, Before the Sun Rises. Check it out on CD Baby and iTunes and around town. And thanks a lot, guys. I really appreciate it.
Beautiful. And go to Dan's website, and you can order directly and do the CD direct purchase through him. And this is John and Jamie, and we're doing our thing. And now we're going to do a secondary fade. This is a first for Guitar Talk. A double fade in one show.
Maybe this can be cut in, so it's actually just a single fade. This is the fade that you're hearing. But now you've ruined it by saying it's
a double fade.
Now you've confused everyone.
But I like the double fade.
We actually just kind of...
Fade out.
Sure.